ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Building muscle has often been seen as a lower priority for people who are focused on trying to get fit and healthy rather than just looking ripped. But scientists now say we need both because strength training lowers your risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, among other illnesses. If you've got stories of how you've made strength training a part of your life, I would love to hear them because it can sometimes seem a little hard to fit it in on top of cardio exercise and all the other things we do in our life. How have you managed it? 0418 226 576. Dr. Gabrielle Lyon is a functional medicine practitioner who can tell us about the magic of muscles, really, and how we can use them to live longer. Dr. Lyon, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, your new book, Forever Strong, the new science-based strategy for aging well, looks at the importance of strength, but also details a bit about your journey as a doctor to understand what's going on. Tell me what started to baffle you about the patients that you'd been seeing.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak and chat about the importance of skeletal muscle health. And the way that I found the importance of this actually was unintentional. So I did my fellowship training. So after you get a board certification in family medicine, you go and you have the opportunity to do additional training. And I chose to do mine in geriatrics and nutritional sciences. And I did a combined fellowship. I looked at clinical research and I looked at body composition and brain function. And I also worked during the day as a geriatrician, focusing on memory and aging and how we can best extend longevity. And I, in the evenings, was doing this research that was my postdoctorate project in brain function and body composition. And I think that we all have that one patient or one client or one individual that really changes the trajectory of how we think about things. And that happened to me. I was imaging the brain of a mid-50-year-old woman who was the mother of three children and had always struggled with the same 20 to 30 pounds and had done everything that people told her, which was exercise more, do more cardio, and eat less. And when I imaged her brain in her mid-50s looked like the beginning of an Alzheimer's brain. And I couldn't shake it. I felt that the medical community had failed her, that what the information that we had told her that she was executing was absolutely not just disrupting her metabolism, but destroying her brain and her body. All of these cycles of yo-yo dieting. And then I thought, what was the one thing that all my sickest patients had in common, from the nursing home floors to the obesity clinics that I was running? And it wasn't that they were overfat, it was really that they were under-muscled. And that was the aha moment for me.
It's really interesting to read through your book, Gabrielle, and see how, you know, a lot of these people were doing everything right, including yourself. You had this personal journey as well. You know, you were eating whole foods, you were eating a really healthy diet, you were getting exercise, but still feeling depleted and exhausted. Tell us how muscle strength changes that.
It's interesting. When you focus on skeletal muscle health, you focus on what you have to gain versus what you have to lose. And even from my own perspective, when I was thinking about how could I be the fittest version of myself and really focused on this cardiovascular activity, you're always chasing something that becomes very difficult to obtain. Versus when you focus on being strong and the health of skeletal muscle, which comes from resistance exercise, then you have and become much more empowered as a human. And that is critical to understand because skeletal muscle is an organ system. It is the largest endocrine organ system in our body. And quite frankly, it's the only organ system that we have direct control over. Oftentimes, we think about the cardiovascular system and we have a doctor that looks at that. And then we think about the pulmonary system, which is the lungs, and someone looks at that. But skeletal muscle is the only organ system that we have direct control over through resistance exercise. And it probably has the biggest impact on our health and longevity as we age.
One of the fascinating things I found in your book, Dr. Lyon, was that you write that muscle isn't just something that helps us lift things. It's the key to metabolic health. And I found that really interesting because you don't generally think of muscle as related to how we process sugars, for example.
Yes. You know, it's funny. And that's why I appreciate having this conversation so much, is that muscle has gotten a bad rap. Meaning, when you think about muscle, you typically think about guys grunting in the weight room or being jacked and wearing a skinny tank top and a tan. But skeletal muscle is so much more than that. That, in fact, being physically fit and having good athletic performance is a byproduct of having healthy skeletal muscle. If we were to break down what skeletal muscle does, it is your metabolic sink, meaning the carbohydrates that you eat, the largest site for glucose disposal, meaning the carbs and sugars that you eat, the largest place that it goes is skeletal muscle. And if you think about it, the more healthy skeletal muscle mass you have, the better of an opportunity you have to put sugar out of your bloodstream into skeletal muscle. And again, there's a lot of talk about type 2 diabetes and obesity and insulin resistance. These are things that begin in skeletal muscle decades before.
That's fascinating. Well, yes. Yeah, because a lot of us, I guess, think, well, it's other organs that deal with insulin and it's other parts of the body, the digestion that deal with this. But you're saying, you know, increasing our resistance training, strengthening our muscles can actually help the way that we process nutrients.
It does. And it's the most effective way, quite frankly. The impact exercise has on the body can never be matched by any kind of medication. When you contract skeletal muscle, it moves sugars out of the bloodstream into the muscle without the use of insulin. When you contract skeletal muscle, it also uses something called fatty acids. People really care about cholesterol, but one of the keys to having a good cholesterol level is having healthy skeletal muscle. Skeletal muscle at rest actually uses fat. The other thing about healthy skeletal muscle is when you exercise based on the intensity and duration, meaning how hard you go and how long you go, causes skeletal muscle to release little peptide hormones called myokines that travel throughout the body, lower inflammation, help with brain neurogenesis, meaning it helps with helps combat the signs of aging, all just by exercising. And it's not just the exercise in and of itself. It's actually the effect of what the muscle does as an organ system and what it secretes that transforms the body.
We're speaking with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. Her new book is Forever Strong, the new science-based strategy for aging well. She's a functional medicine practitioner, and as you heard, has researched widely in this area and has worked in geriatrics for a period as well. Useful background, I imagine. Gabrielle, we should test, you know, how strong is the science here? How strong is the science that says it's the muscles that are giving people these benefits?
The science is there. We know that the greater muscle mass, the greater the healthy muscle mass that an individual has, the greater the survivability against nearly every kind of disease. If you want to live long and you want to be healthy, skeletal muscle has decades of research behind it. And it truly, while these concepts are innovative, the science is very solid, tested, and practiced over time.
Okay, so if we need to start building strength to get all these benefits, you know, lowering our risk of things like diabetes, heart disease, cancer, as you argue, how do we start and when?
As early as possible. As early as possible. And that is kind of the funny thing, is that people will say, well, children aren't supposed to exercise. We don't even call it exercise. It is an active lifestyle. There's no such thing as a healthy sedentary person. You can move from the time that you can walk. And then as children get older, you know, my children, I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. They come to the gym with me in the morning. They're not doing 1 rep max squats, but you better believe that we're doing push-ups together to the best of their ability, and that we're doing squats together, their body weight. We're just moving our body. And that actually primes their skeletal muscle to maintain its health as they age. It primes their tendons to prevent injury, and it primes these muscles when they are younger. It's almost like putting money into a bank for retirement. It is never too early to start. And on the flip side, it's never too late to start. We see research that 75, 85-year-olds can put both muscle mass and strength on. They are able to improve skeletal muscle mass and function regardless of age.
When you talk about getting kids involved in going to the gym, I think a lot of our listeners will be a bit concerned about that idea in terms of wondering if there are ways we can model healthy, active lifestyles for kids without focusing in so much on going to the gym from such a young age. I mean, there's been a lot of anxiety in Australia about younger and younger kids going to the gym influenced by social media and wanting to look bigger and things like that. And it can lead to these unhealthy attitudes about muscles. Size, for example. Are there ways that we can build muscle from a young age that's not necessarily about gym sessions, but just about being active, but including that strength training in our activity?
Absolutely. And typically that would be even going to the park, being active on the monkey bars, being active climbing. It doesn't have to be a gym session at all. In fact, bodyweight exercise for a beginner is a great way to begin to stimulate tissue. And again, it is not about being bigger. It's truly about being able to be functional. We're not training to become better at exercise. We're going and we're being active to become better at life, to be able to move through life in a way that keeps us ultimately out of nursing homes, that prevents falls, that allows us to get groceries and put them away and carry them back and put our suitcase overhead. That's why we're actually doing these things. And then we also need metabolic health. From my perspective, to answer your question, it should be a way of life. Movement and stimulating your body for adaptation should be thought of as a way of life.
We're speaking with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. She's a functional medicine practitioner trained as a doctor, and her book is called Forever Strong, The New Science-Based Strategy for Aging Well. Gabrielle Lyon, it's been fascinating speaking with you just a little bit about your research today. Thank you for joining us on Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me. Truly is an honour. Thank you.
Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, a functional medicine practitioner who's written a book called Forever Strong, The New Science-Based Strategy for Aging Well. Associate Professor David Scott is an exercise scientist at Deakin University, and he's been seeing the growing strength of this research over the last few years on the importance of muscle strength, building muscle, and he's very keen about getting that message across to particularly older Australians. David, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Hilary. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell us what we know for sure about how important retaining muscle mass is for our health as we age.
Yeah, well, look, it's really vital. I guess, as we're all aware, as we start to age, we're going to lose muscle mass and strength. And we actually have a term for this, which is sarcopenia. And this process generally begins in our 30s to 40s and then increases in pace in older adulthood. So our 60s, 70s, 80s, the muscle decline is much quicker. And as your previous speaker mentioned, eventually this can lead to challenges in doing what we call the activities of daily living. So things like being able to move around your community, go shopping, manage your household, do garden work, for instance, and then also just caring for oneself. And eventually we can get to a point where we lose our independence and need support from a carer or potentially to enter aged care. And I guess the other concern is obviously that it increases our risk of falls and fractures. And these are major public health issues for our aging population.
Well, if our text line is anything to go by, a lot of older Australians are really keen to include strength training in their daily lives. Here's one representative one. I belong to a gym and attend the 50-plus classes 3 or 4 times a week. The average age is 74. We have around 25 participants each class, 20 to 30 minutes cardio, 30 minutes strength training. Very social, and all of us are looking fantastic. Well, that's good to know. Text messages on 0418 226 576. David, we know too that Australians are not anywhere near the recommended amount of physical activity, let alone strength training requirements. What are those requirements, and what would it take to get there?
Yeah, so I think the evidence at the moment it's improving by the looks of it. So a lot of the older data tells us that probably only about 10 to 20% of Australians are participating in any strength training. We're starting to see some more recent evidence that that's moving upwards to around 30 to 40%. Unfortunately, it does seem to be more popular in younger adults than older adults. And you know, I think it's great that younger adults are doing it, but obviously we know older adults are probably the people who are going to get the most immediate benefit from participating in this type of training. But the basic guidelines, which, you know, the physical activity guidelines in Australia have only included strength training since 2014. So I think that message is only really starting to come out more recently. And they indicate that we want to be including strength training in our routine about 2 days per week.
How much, though? Those guidelines are very vague about that.
That is true. So, look, I think there's a lot of different ways that we can do it. But generally, you are probably looking at doing a 30-minute to 1 hour bout of resistance training. I think that what we want to be doing is targeting about 7 to 10 muscle groups in both the upper body and lower body, and probably trying to do 3 sets of 6 to 12 repetitions of each exercise. And probably starting out, you're going to try and do those at about 40% of the maximum weight that you would be able to lift if you for each exercise, and doing that 6 to 12 times. As you start to improve, you can increase that to gradually and eventually get to a point where you're probably trying to lift about 80% of that maximum weight that you can lift. So always ensuring that the exercise is progressive in terms of the challenge so that you continue to improve your muscle mass and your strength.
We did a story about exercise snacking at one point, David, which was very heartening for those of us who can only fit little amounts of exercise into the windows in our life. Is it the same for strength training?
Yeah, absolutely. I think exercise snacking really lends itself well to resistance training, because resistance training is something that you can do in very short bouts and get some benefit from. Potentially compared to cardio, which generally needs longer bouts, and also can be done pretty much anywhere in your home, you know, at the park, with very minimal equipment. I think sometimes there's a perception that we need to go to the gym to do this type of training, but you can do it at home just using your own body weight type exercises like push-ups, or perhaps you can purchase some dumbbells or resistance bands. And so just by doing, you know, 3 or 4 short 10 to 15 minute bouts of different exercises across the day, maybe 2 or 3 hours apart from each other, you can get a decent amount of daily exercise and daily strength training without really needing to find a big block of time in your day where you can dedicate that time.
I love too how you can just go to the internet now and type in body weight exercises, strength training, and your age group, and come up with these amazing range of options for, yeah, as you say, not going to the gym. We're speaking with Associate Professor David Scott, who's an exercise scientist with the Institute for Physical Activity and Nutrition at Deakin University. David, I mean, I can totally see why people might struggle to fit in an extra hour or so of strength training into their schedule during the week. But is it also partly about mindset, about our assumptions about muscle strength as we get older?
I think so. I think, you know, a major issue that we see is that people, as they age, generally will say to us, look, I'm slowing down, I'm having a bit more trouble, you know, doing this activity. But that's just something that happens when you get older. And yes, we will lose muscle mass and strength as we age. You know, that's why there's not going to be any 80-year-old powerlifters in the Olympics this year, because obviously there is a decline in what our muscles are capable of as we age. But I think where we need to change the narrative is this idea that it's somewhat inevitable that we're going to get to a point where we're not able to take good care of ourselves and potentially live fairly long periods at the end of our life where we don't have that level of independence. So I think it's really important for people to understand that you can reverse this. You can get back to a set point, or you can just maintain where you're at through strength training and avoid, you know, getting to that point where you're not able to do the things that you really enjoy doing.
One final question, David. When we think about how weight loss might interact with muscle strength, that's something a lot of people have been told to manage by their doctors, you know, lose a bit of weight for longer life. But you have some concerns about how that might play into our muscle loss as we age.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess a lot of people probably aren't aware that I guess one of the unfortunate side effects of weight loss is that we will lose muscle. So generally, most weight loss strategies will result in a loss of, or the total weight that is lost is about 30 to 40% muscle rather than fat. So we also know that people, when they stop a weight loss intervention, such as the new weight loss drugs, will often regain body weight and a substantial amount of the amount that they originally lost. And a great deal of that will be fat, and they don't really gain a lot of muscle mass. So I think it's really crucial, as we see more people particularly starting to take these newer weight loss drugs, that it's that we're really ensuring that these people are also monitored in terms of what's happening to their muscles, how much they're losing during the intervention, but also then being provided with strength training to make sure we minimize that muscle loss and make sure that you know, going forward, that they regain as much muscle as possible.
And I know that both you and Dr. Gabrielle Lyon are very keen to see greater awareness among health practitioners about the importance of muscle strength and muscle training. David, it's been fascinating chatting with you today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks again.
Associate Professor David Scott, who's an exercise scientist at Deakin University. You heard earlier from Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, a functional medicine practitioner and the author of Forever Strong.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.